with that all said and done, we are going to start the call. And yeah, you guys want to do an open, then I'll do logistics and we'll take it from here.
Yeah, I mean, I could do a quick thing, and then Steve, if you want to, whatever comes to mind, and then yeah, we'd love to just really, this call is for you all listening to it. I have been so delighted with how this program came out. When Steve and I sat down to do it, I think we both were like, this and the idea of helping people with something that is so emotive, that for so many of us is such a big deal without the full personal touch, is something that we were, you know, hopeful about, but a little wary of. And I've been really pleased, and thank you all of you who've written in to talk about how impacted you've been, because it's very rewarding. That was our hope. And so it's been a delight. So this is the bit where we can get a little bit more high touch and we can directly answer questions. But again, thank you for sharing your stories of how you've been impacted already so far. So that's my little opener, Steve.
Well, am I supposed to refute that? Is that how this works?
No, it's not really like point counterpoint. You don't have to begin with Jane, you ignorant slut, for those of you who are alive in the 70s. But
I feel the same way. I've gotten a lot of feedback on the program, on the Financially Fearless program. And I've been really, really happy with people saying they're watching it or they're sharing it with family. Remember, if you share it with anyone, send another payment as soon as you can. But they've been really, the feedback has been great, which has been fun, because when something's that much fun to do, sometimes I wonder, oh my gosh, is it really going to be? Because it was just, and for a lot of people, it's been very helpful so far. And it was fun to do, a great privilege. And I was a little out of my element doing this, because I usually work with a live audience or people there. And I tried to do a few coaching sessions for the program, and they didn't turn out so well, so they ended up on the cutting room floor. And I'm not that good a coach. I mean, I think people who've worked with me would be able to tell you that, but it was good we didn't put them in the program.
You made a slight difference in my life, but I'll just throw that out there.
I mean, okay, well, thank you. But that took many, many hours, and I wasn't able to make that happen in individual coaching sessions with people. I had people that I was coaching for the program who would show up to the session saying, yeah, I'm fine with money. I've got the universe behind me, and I channel Abraham, and so there's no problem. And so then we had 58 more minutes to try to fill. But I'm not complaining. It was fun. And a lot of my life has ended up on the cutting room floor. And I've learned to not take it personally and just go with it.
So that said, Lynn, I think we should swiftly move on to the Q&A portion.
However, I will say, you know, I'm up for deals. I will sell the stuff that ended up on the cutting room floor if anyone wants to come over. Okay, with that all said and done, calls for you. So if you go down to your participants box, raise your digital hand, I will be able to bring you on. And Steve and Michael are here for you.
Yeah. You know, Lynn, you deserve a lot of credit for this program. I mean, you edited, you directed us when we were doing it and getting out of hand and having too much fun at times. You were able to reel us back to the grim reality of masterclass filming. And you did a great job. And I don't think you get enough recognition because you work with Michael.
Yes, this is true. You are absolutely right, Steve. I do not get enough recognition because I work for Michael.
I think she gets as much recognition as she's willing to take, but that's just a personal opinion. Again, swiftly moving on to the Q&A.
Well, yeah, we've had some questions. Lynn, we've had some questions.
Emailed in, right? To my phone for the people on Zoom who are being shy and don't put their hand up. So let's go. Okay, so start up. Question from Stephanie Davis. In the last coaching session in the series, you talked about having nothing at stake when making money. In situations where a person has a reasonable, nice setup or cushion, I can see this working very nicely. But what about more precarious situations like third world countries or in nature? Do animals have nothing at stake going after their prey? I'm just trying to understand how far the idea goes.
Well, animals have nothing at stake when they're trying to make money, which is, I think, the context that we set it in.
No animals have been coached during this program. I think nothing at stake, and I think she's referring to something Michael said in one of his great sessions, is a kind of state of mind or almost a beautiful mood to fall in so that I'm not over anxious about the result of the service I'm providing for money, as opposed to really truly having nothing at stake. That's a different situation, but maybe you can explain it, Michael, but it's more of a state of mind that can be cultivated in making money so that I'm not so worried and anxious about the outcome, and I don't let that get in the way of any conversation I have about a service I have to offer.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I use this particular analogy in the program, but an analogy I have often used around this is playing with the house's money. So if I were to hire you to gamble for me because you're so good looking and creative, and that if you look like you're having fun at my casino, everybody's going to want to gamble at my casino. I'm going to pay you $500 a night to come in to my casino, and I'm going to give you $10,000 worth of chips. And your job is to have as much fun playing as you can. And that $10,000 will last you as long as it lasts you. And at the end of the night, if you've lost all the money, come to the cashier's desk and I'll write you a check for $500. And if at the end of the night you have 10 million in chips, come to the cash desk at the end of the night, I'll give you a check for $500. That's what it is to play with the house's money. You can have fun playing the game as if it really matters, but fundamentally you know that it doesn't. Well, the reason that I talk about all of business, all money, all life as playing with the house's money is what we are worried is at stake is our happiness and well-being. We think if I can't get this much money, if I can't sell to this person, if I can't make this business work, I will be miserable and destroyed. Well, if that's the stakes that you're playing for, you're going to be uptight. You're unlikely to be at your best. You're unlikely to be really present and responsive. You're unlikely to be really connected to the people around you. And so you're unlikely to do particularly well. If you can start to see that your happiness and well-being and contentment are never at stake because they are nothing to do with circumstance, unless you think everyone in the third world is miserable all the time, which is not evidently true from my time spent in what we call third world countries, but it doesn't even stand up to much scrutiny. I mean, it's true on the late night thing where they're trying to get you to give money to people. They show you the ones that are really having a tough time. That's true. There are people having a tough time at any point in the world. But their happiness and well-being is not at stake. It's an independent variable. And the more, in my experience, that we see that money and happiness and well-being are not connected, They're not cause effect. Money does not cause happiness, and lack of money does not cause misery. Then it becomes a lot easier to play the game. So is there money at stake? Usually. But what's not at stake is your well-being. What's not at stake is your happiness.
Okay, now we have lots of hands up. Okay, Tiffany, we're going to start with you this morning. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. I wondered if I could ask a question. The reason I signed up for the program, which was amazing, by the way, thank you both so much. It definitely loosened a lot of concrete around my financial beliefs. I came into it wanting to know how I could make money from a different source. And the context behind that is I've got a repetitive thought that I don't make money through my business, but I'm really good at getting money from other places, which tends to be handouts or tends to be wins and things like that. I haven't managed to sort of see that differently yet. I haven't managed to say that, do the sources of the money matter? Or is that just something that I'm almost like too hung up on? I'm not quite sure. I just wondered if you could speak a little bit about different sources of money, because that was the place I came in on.
Steve, do you mind if I take for your?
No, go.
Okay. Well, look, what came to mind immediately, and I'll just start with this, Tiffany, is artists used to exist on patronage. Mm-hmm. Michelangelo did not make money selling his art. He had wealthy patrons that paid for his life, and he made art. Mm. There was no shame in that. There was no judgment in that, because that's the way the society had it set up. We have moved more recently into and I'm going to call it this with apologies to Protestants everywhere, a Protestant work ethic economy, where the value is in the work. If I worked hard, I am good. If I did not work hard, I am lazy. I am the devil's playground, essentially. So now, if my money comes from anything other than hard work, I'm brought up to believe that that's problematic, that that's bad, that's wrong, that's lazy, that's whatever I think it is. Neither is true, right? We happen to have been brought up in a culture that at the moment is pretty inculcated in the hard work is the only legitimate way to make money, and anything else is dodgy. But that's happenstance. Mm. That's not even personal to us that we pick that up. Mm. So that for me is the seeing, is that money is money, and then I have all my thinking. So we actually have a thing in our business that we call free money, which is anytime money comes in from $2 up that we didn't actively go out and earn, celebratory emails go back and forth. Because free money's the coolest money as far as I'm concerned. I get I can work hard and make money. I love the other stuff. So hopefully you just start to see, like, it's like, yeah, we can make it up any way we want. But ultimately, once you're on the airplane, it doesn't matter how tightly you cut it to make it through security. Steve, you got?
Yeah, I had to, for me, for things to really change in making money for me, because I had so many miserable decades of thinking I'm probably not working hard enough, or I don't deserve money, I'm not working hard enough. For things to change for me, I had to see that it was really whether someone was being served. And the level, the degree to which they're being served And the difference, whatever my service or my activity or my communication is making for them, is going to be where the money comes from. So that allowed me to start focusing more on that. Is there service in this that I'm providing that's making a difference for this person? It's not whether am I working hard enough. And if money came from other sources, an inheritance or a night in Michael's casino, then that's fine too, because I like Michael said, I don't want to attach my own beliefs of shame and blame and superstition and what would my parents think of me at this stage. I don't want to add that in anymore, because that always just got in the way. So I like your question. I think that it is possible to bring greater enjoyment to this whole process, to allow myself greater enjoyment and less of a white knuckle approach to making money, and then questioning whether I really deserve this because it came from here or it came from there. I was able over time to drop that, and that allowed me to serve people faster and with more clarity.
One of the things I'll add to that, Tiffany, and we're taking time, I just so you know, Tiffany, I want to take the time with this because I think this is a lot of people's question, right? So it's not, I'm not like, you're not taking anyone's time.
Okay.
We've got this weird idea in our culture that the less pleasant the job, the more we want to be paid for it. And the more pleasant the job, the less we need to be paid for it. Now, on the one hand, of course, I understand that. On the other hand, that essentially means that if I really want to make money, I have to do things that I hate. So my choices are make a little bit of money, enough to get by and love my job, or hate my job but be rich as Croesus. Now, that is not a game I would willfully put myself into, and yet it's the game that most of us wake up inside of. When you, as Steve pointed out, when you start recognizing that money is exchanged for value, for service, for difference made, then it's a moot point how much you enjoy it. It's irrelevant to how much money you can make. Mm-hmm. And suddenly, it becomes a lot easier to enjoy doing things that really make a difference and therefore make a lot of money, mm-hmm. instead of doing things that really make a difference but you hate doing them to make a lot mm-hmm. of money. The common element is the difference made, not how much you enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Cool. Thank you.
Okay, let's go talk to Asanka next. You want to unmute yourself for me, Asanka?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey,
hi, guys.
Asanka. Nice to see you.
Hey, nice to see you guys too. First of all, the course is amazing. I'm still going through it and I'm taking my time because there's just so much information in the videos. What was really interesting that popped up for me is with anything I ever did, like to me, I didn't do it to make money. I did it because I loved doing it and like it mattered to me and the service that came out of it resonated with me. But I've noticed whenever that course or that direction, that inspiration is not there, I come to a grinding halt. And even when I wait to find out what the next direction, next move is, to do something just to earn money, to keep me going, sustainable, I struggle to move. And I've got this weird thing tangled with doing what matters to me, versus not doing anything if it doesn't matter to me. And then the money's caught up in it. And I've been trying to tease that out. And I've been really struggling with that. And I'm not sure what I'm not seeing here yet. I'd love to hear your perspectives.
If we pulled the camera back a second, literally, would we see that you're sitting in front of a fake wall and that you're actually living on the street with a dog with a little cardboard sign that says, you know, please feed me?
No.
So that calls into question that you don't do anything to make money unless you're completely into it. Or that maybe you do, but it's clearly not problematic. Like, in other words, if you were having this conversation with us, if you were asking this question from the streets,
yeah,
then I could see, oh, maybe it is problematic that he has to be in a certain state of mind to do anything that adds enough value to make money. But you're not. So that can't be true.
Huh. It's funny, like when you just replayed that back to me, the whole context of where I was coming from, I don't know, I just feel like my legs just went wobbly because it just feels like it hasn't got legs anymore. I don't still get why. Something dropped, Michael. I'm not sure what it is.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry about what it is too much. I'd let it drop.
Okay.
And then, you know, if at some point it occurs to you, shoot us an email. We'd love to know.
Thank you.
Thanks, Asenka.
Cool. Thank you, Asenka. Okay, let's go and talk to Christia. Ooh. Who are... Oh, Christia, are you there? Oh, can we hear you? Can you speak for me?
Hey.
Oh, that's you.
Hey, there she is. Dun, 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 dun.
Hi, thank you for taking me. So for me, I entered the program because while I love what I do, I do struggle with finances. I have student loans, and I feel like that's kind of keeping me... from really pursuing some of the things that I'm looking to pursue.
Can you give an example of something you would like to pursue, but you're feeling you can't because you have student loans?
Well, I would like to pursue kind of a coaching private practice idea, but I understand to maintain financial stability at this point, I need to maintain like my 9-to-5, which I have a great flexible job that does allow free time for me to explore possibilities. But I also have, you know, people around me who are telling me I should continue to just focus on the 9-to-5, focus on paying the loans, because any excess money should be going towards those loans and not towards, you know, using the money as a tool to build a practice for myself.
And do you listen to those voices more than your own? What does your inner voice tell you?
I do tend to follow the yardsticks, I think, of the people around me. You know, I guess my inner voice, you know, tells me to go for it at times. And typically when I listen to that voice, things turn out pretty well. And I've kind of found listening to, you know, the people around me, things don't always go well if it doesn't intuitively fit with my inner voice.
Yeah, good. I mean, that there's a real lesson there. I was in a conversation today with someone who makes a lot of money doing what she loves. And what she said was, what really changed for her was Michael's book, The Inside Out Revolution, and more listening to her inner wisdom and less trying to please everybody in her world, which is, I tried to play that game for years, and it had me resenting those people. A lot of the people that, I work with now who are coaches, they did a little bit of coaching on the side, like you're saying, would be fun for you or really calls to you. They did it on the side, and then it got a little traction, and they did a little more on the side, and it started making money for them, and it started crowding out their day job. It started to actually make more sense financially to do more of that. So instead of taking some kind of scary leap from one profession to another, they built a little bridge with their spare time into the things that they wanted to do even more than their 9 to 5. And it sounds like you've got a good 9 to 5. It's got some flexibility. And how regularly do you have to answer to people around you? Do they have CCTV in your office tracking what you're doing, or can you do you have to answer for your every choice?
No.
Yeah, and I think for me, Krista, part of growing up in a good sense, not in the old world sense, like be a grown-up, be boring, be miserable but responsible. Yeah. That was my picture of growing up. And then later, I really got a different picture, which was more like a tree grows and grows and flowers. And that kind of growing up, for me, involved more trusting of my inner wisdom that was coming through and less trying to do all the things people thought I should be doing. That was just my experience. I don't know if that's helpful to you.
It is. I'm curious, what happens if you feel like you're losing traction at some point? Like, you've started, you see that you're getting momentum, but at some point you stall.
Well, for me, stalling, it's part of it. It can be okay. I don't want to mistake stalling for not making invisible progress. So I can feel like things are stalling and not going well, but it could just be a stage of development that I'm labeling as failure, but it's just a natural part of it. Whenever you learn a language or play an instrument, there comes a time when it doesn't feel like I'm playing the piano any better than I was a few months ago. And then one day I sit down and all of a sudden there's been a jump. And so I didn't need ongoing traction. So maybe set traction aside as something you think you need to always have to make sure you're making progress.
Okay. Thank you.
Let me throw in a couple of thoughts, because I love what Steve's saying. The first one is, I'm only vaguely inclined to take advice unless I'm with somebody who is fabulously happy and loves their life. Like, that seems to me like I'm interested in what they have to say. I'm not so interested in learning from miserable millionaires. And so that's one thought. Second, very much like Steve said around building a practice, I remember a guy coming on one of my courses and going, right, I quit my job. What do I do next? And I was like, see if they'll give you your job back. Because why would you put the pressure on something that is new, that you are learning, that you are kind of a beginner at, to make you money before you're great at it? So there's a real gift to me. I talked about patronage earlier. To me, your 9-to-5 job is like the Pope giving money to Michelangelo so he can just go create art. It's like, how cool is that, that people are willing to pay you so that you can develop a craft? I think that's neat.
I agree.
The last thing, and this is just an analogy for what Steve was saying. Traction is sort of like a car metaphor, like the tires have to get traction. I went for a ride on the Thames once, and within the Thames in England, there's a canal system. And when you go the canals, there are locks. So there are places where the boat has to go in, and it has to sit there while they raise the water level in the lock before the boat can be released to the next level of the river. I think that's a better metaphor than traction for the way that things develop. There are times where we will seem like we're really moving. There are times where it will seem like we're standing still, but it's because we're going vertically instead of horizontally. And you start to get a feel for yourself for if you really are stuck, which can happen, or if you're just in a little sort of the water level needs to rise a bit before you move forward again.
That makes sense. Thank you.
Thank you, Krista.
Okay, let's go and speak to Don next.
Hey, Michael and Steve, how are you guys?
Good.
Very good.
Good. It's good to be here and good to talk with you. I'm excited about learning and going through these courses. My question, I have probably a lot of questions, but one of my questions revolves around the idea of our concepts of money and fear that comes up when we're looking at a budget, or we think we should be budgeting a certain way. Or Michael said something in a recording I was listening to the other day, because I was recently introduced to him by my girlfriend, and I'm having Michael Neal immersion therapy at the moment. But I can't remember the video, but he talked about something where he had this thought that I'm not good with money. And it was relating to how he was managing his business. But just having that underlying thought of, I'm not good with money. So like the process of sitting down and budgeting money and tracking where that's going and those sorts of things that maybe don't feel naturally in myself, I'm aware of the thought that I don't want to open up my bank account to see what I don't have. And I felt that way when I had a lot of money, and I felt that way when I didn't have a lot of money. So it's not like the amount of money in the bank, you know, matters, but it's that underlying belief. I'm wondering how, you know, ways to work with that thought to change that thought. I mean, I know I can recognize that it's a thought, but it's a powerful one. The energy behind it is a powerful one. So how would you recommend going about unwinding the energy of that?
Well, personally, I wouldn't, because the reason it feels like there's so much energy behind it is because of how much you think about it. So right. Thinking about it more is going to just make it seem like an even bigger deal, right? Banks used to talk about it as taking a shower to try to get dry. How long should I shower in order to get dry? Well, no, you're literally doing the exact opposite of what we're
doing. Right.
Now, what is worth doing, from my point of view, would be seeing how much easier is it to plug in a lamp when you're looking at the socket than when you're trying to do it without looking.
Right.
It is much, much easier to manage money when you look at it than when you don't. That's all. That's the only relevant bit of what you're talking about, to my mind, that's going to help you with money, is you'll do a lot better when you look. Mm-hmm. And when you go, I'm doing my best, I'm trying really hard, it's like that's just a setup for disaster.
Yeah, and I can relate to that disaster. Long before there was coaching, and I can speak to this to all of you, I can speak from that age.
17th century, was that?
That was long ago.
Yeah.
And there wasn't coaching, but there was psychology. And I had a great therapist by the name of Nathaniel Brandon. And he was well known in the world of self-esteem, and I had all these money problems. And one of the things he used to do that was so effective was if I had a problem organizing money or budgeting or organizing my day so that my activities would bring more money, rather than him trying to help me do something differently, he would always say, he would have me finish the sentence, if I brought 5% more consciousness to how I organize my money, what would occur? 5%, not 100%, changing completely, but just more being willing to be more awake. Because what he told me about my life and my disaster was I was like a guy who wanted to cross a 6-lane highway and was so afraid of all the trucks and cars that he put a blindfold on before he walks across the highway.
Right.
He said, that's your life. And he said, so that's not going to serve you. So what he told me, and I don't know if this applies to you, Don, but he said, you're afraid of consciousness itself. You're afraid of reality. You're afraid of, and it's not as threatening as you think, but you can only learn that through experimentation. Yeah. You can't learn it by hearing me say it or reading a book or trying to trust it. So what he would tell me is bring 5% more consciousness to whether you're saving some of your money and where you're putting it, or whether you're putting it to the places that are going to have your life be less stressful. Just bring a little more awareness to it each day and see what occurs. And the more you do that, report back to me as to whether that was really unsafe or whether the opposite is happening to you, that there's less of a threat than you feared. And the more awareness and consciousness you bring to anything, including how you manage money, whether you're good at it or not, things will go better and be more relaxing. And there wasn't as much to fear as I thought there was.
Right. Yeah, Steve. I like that concept of kind of going in increments like that.
Yeah.
Makes it more a little more approachable, and I think my sense is you're right that it'll not be so scary, and then I wonder what was the big deal all along.
That's right, I just
very quickly, I want to really recommend go back to Steve's video on time and attention. Right, the video in the program on time and attention to me is one of the most practical pieces of the whole program, and if you put more time and attention into trying to change your beliefs and change your thinking, then you'll get better at that. But if you want to get better at making money and running a business and using your money wisely, you want to put the time and attention on that.
Thank you.
Great, thanks.
Cool. Okay, let's go to Yasmin and her dog. Yasmin, you might have to unmute yourself for me.
Let me push the dog away. First of all, hi everyone. Michael, long time no speak.
Hi, Steve, nice to see you.
Good to see you.
Good to see you.
the first thing I'm not finished with the program, but the first thing that made a difference for me was financial freedom versus financial flexibility. And I kind of went, OMG, I've had financial freedom all this time. What I really wanted was financial flexibility. So that was really cool to hear. What I want to address is I'm really annoyed with myself because every time I want to look at money, I'm actually looking at me, and it's all attached to me. It's all about, like, the world revolves around me, and it annoys me. In 2013, I wanted to do Super Coach Academy, and I couldn't do it because I didn't have any money. And I talked to Michael, and Michael said, Jasmine, I invite you to consider, it has nothing to do with money. And I was like, yeah, you're right, Michael. And in my mind, I'm like, no, Michael, you don't understand. I don't have any money. And fast forward to now, I've sold my house. I've handled all my debts. I do have the money. And yet, I'm still not registered, because it's all about how I won't be able to do it, how I won't make it worth it, how I don't really understand. Like, it's really annoying. It's like, and I'm doing this other class with you, Michael, the business class, and I've been raising my hand and lowering my hand and raising my hand and lowering my hand. And I was like, okay, this is not just talk. And get some coaching around this. I'm stuck in my thoughts. So I was wondering if anybody could talk to that.
Well, I think it's really healthy-minded to be annoyed when you see I'm focusing too much on myself, I'm making money be about me. Because most people do that without realizing that that's what they're doing. They think that's just the truth. You know, this is real. And for years, my whole life was living in the inquiry, what's wrong with me? And what I didn't see was what's wrong with me was that I was always asking, what's wrong with me? And once I saw it, that became annoying, like you're saying, like, that's annoying. But that's good. Like, if I have a splinter in my foot, I think this is really annoying. Every time I put my foot down, it hurts. But being annoyed with that allows me to sit down and take a look at my foot and pull the splinter out. So being annoyed is really a stage in your enlightenment, because it'll start to move from being annoyed to it won't even come up as strongly anymore, because it's not something you're giving as much value or weight to, and you can start to move to do I want to do Super Coach Academy? Yes, I do, and therefore I'll do it. And then some thought will come up, well, maybe you won't make it work for you. And you'll see, well, that thought is not useful to me. Thoughts are tools that I can use or not. And that thought's not very useful, so I'll let it go through. That comes from the old days. Those are thoughts from my previous conditioning, how I used to be. And I'm not... I don't have to be upset that thoughts from the old days arise. Just as I learn a new language or a new way of being, a new way of living, there will be thoughts from the old way that show up and think they're helping me, and I can see them and say, no, not useful anymore. That's from before. And pretty soon they won't even come up as much, because they'll realize, okay, we're not as useful as we used to be. At least that was my experience. So one thing to take a look at, it was for me, was, am I annoyed that I'm annoyed? Now I'm annoyed because I'm annoyed. And that can go on forever. Like when I used to get a haircut as a kid, there were all these mirrors, and I can see myself going back, and I can keep adding criticism of the self-criticism. I shouldn't be self-critical. I've learned all this. I've been coached. Why am I being self-critical? And then I say, oh, there I go again. Now I'm being self-critical of me being self-critical. And why do I do that? But see it as a healthy form of being annoyed. It's like, yeah, I like it that I'm annoyed. I'm starting to see there's too much focus on me here, and that's not useful to my prosperity or to the world or to other people. And thank you, Mr. Annoyance. I appreciate you pointing that out to me. Now be gone. Michael, can you clean that up?
I thought it was really good. I don't think there's anything there to clean up. I think it's consciousness is that which allows us to notice. And noticing is really a simple navigational tool. When we notice something is unpleasant, then we're less inclined to go there. If we think it's a life circumstance that we're feeling, then we'll try and avoid or change that life circumstance. But when we see that we're only ever feeling thought in the moment, then that's just letting us know, wow, that is a lousy way to think about things. And it's like, you know, we don't have to be taught hand on hot stove, ooh, ouch, that hurts. We get a little bit of pain to prevent damage. Well, annoyance is kind of like that. It's a little bit of pain from your thinking to let you know, yeah, you don't want to really sit in that thinking because that'll mess you up. And so I agree with Steve. I think that's a totally healthy thing. I think that's part of, you know, you waking up a little bit more to the thought-created nature of your reality, which is the ultimate freedom game.
It's fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you, Jasmine.
Thank you.
Cool. Okay, let's go and talk to Janan next. All yours.
Hello. Hi, Michael. Hi, Steve. Thank you so much for the course. First of all, it was fantastic. I must say, the course in itself wasn't a huge eye-opener just because thanks to the previous coaching through CTI, etc., on the subject of money. And my understanding of the three principles for a while now, and being in that place of consciousness and seeing life differently and everything different, money included, has changed my concept about money. My relationship with it has been bad for all of my life. I was surprised from myself even when I was left without a job at the beginning of 2018, that I had no concerns, no worries. I mean, I would have been like that under the burden of the thought of how can I provide at age 75 for maybe a few chunk of years without even nothing in my retirement fund. So it's scary. I mean, some people make it, but I took it so easily and I kind of really was comfortable with it. Comfortable with scaling down, comfortable with being realistic about my situation and what I expect and what I can get, what I can do. And I navigated through it. I immerse myself in art and I just navigated through it so smoothly. Now, from this course, I have a question, but from this course, I want to thank you very much about one particular thing. The formula that Michael you talk about, and the value formula when you talk about scarcity. Now that was a game changer for me, and I was in a circumstance where that applied to an assignment. I don't call it a job, but it kind of came from a friend through a friend, etc. And there I was in a situation where I had to do something that became so enjoyable for me. I'm giving you all the time and attention because that was a wonderful thing also to apply. And I realized that maybe very few in that position, in that situation, you know, for that job would be able to deliver what I'm delivering. And even the person who gave me the job, he's a very big shot and he knows and he's very wonderful person. And he says, well, no one else can do this. even without knowing me before much, but he saw samples of my work and how I was able to do it. So because it involved writing, it involved storytelling, and it involved interviewing, it involved
Janae, I'm just in the interest of time, can you go to the question part of it?
Yeah, I will, but I wanted just to say that this thing about the scarcity principle was mm-hmm. really the crux of it all.
Yeah.
And now I'm kind of seeing it, and I'm going to apply it in different ways in all other opportunities. And that was crucial for me. Now, the question that I still have is that with regard to money, I have no respect for money still. Is that a factor? Is that something that needs to, I need to kind of find my way around it? Because it's fine. I'm not kind of burdened. I'm not worried if it's not there. I can deal with and I find ways in getting it or making it easily. But I still don't respect money at all.
Well, here would be my question. Do you not respect it, or do you actively disrespect it?
No, I think I thought about that. I don't think I have much. What do I mean by respect? I don't know. I don't value it.
Okay. I mean, it's a value. So that's why I was asking, because yeah. I don't have a lot of respect. Don't kick them out of my house and refuse to use them. Now, a fork is a very valuable tool for eating with.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't need to respect it to eat with it. But if mm-hmm. I disrespect it to the point where I don't want to be around it or use it, then I don't get the value from it. So that would be the thing that I would suggest looking at around money is it's fine if you don't need any more respect for money than you have for forks. But if you actively disrespect it, well, then you're not going to get what's on offer from it. And that would
no,
be the
no, decision. I don't think so, because I appreciate it when it comes. Like, I mean, I know it's a tool and you know, I need it, and I'm grateful and appreciative when it comes. And I'm trying to find ways to, you know, to allow it to come to me. So, I mean, so no, I don't think I deliberately disrespect it in that sense, okay. but I still don't. So my only concern is that will that affect my future, you know?
It goes back to the question of playing with the house's money.
Yeah.
Right? When you're playing with the house's money, if you imagine that scenario, and I'm talking to everybody here as if that were real, you know that it's not yours to keep, but you can have a lot of fun playing with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so if your current level of respect for valuing of money allows you to really play with it and have a lot of fun with it, then that's perfect. If your level of not respecting and not valuing it means you don't do anything around it and don't want to look at it particularly and kind of just... then that's going to work against you.
Yeah, no, thank you. Thank you for putting it in that perspective. No, it's the first, definitely. Okay, no, mm-hmm. absolutely. No. I'm very easy around it now. Much, much easier. Yeah.
Congratulations. No, I don't have any. Great.
Yeah.
Go okay. you. Okay.
Nice. So I don't.
Oh.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you, Janae.
Okay, good.
One more in, do we think?
Yeah, let's sneak one more in.
Okay, Louise, I'm going to sneak you in under the wire.
Hi, thanks ever so much. I am loving the course. I've not worked all my way, like, through everything as of yet. But I really wanted to ask you this question because it's I've noticed something that I'm doing that seems to me like it's now becoming a big problem. I have this thing where I go, I need to make this amount of money in order to keep a roof over my head and my son's head. So I have to make this amount of money in order to have a house for us to live in. I've been quite clever in tricking myself to see that my security doesn't come from money and my freedom doesn't come from money, but my house does. It's like part of me is clinging on to this. And when I go to that place, when I go to that thought, I then like drive myself crazy with it and get really pressured and panicked. And then I go, oh my God, this is like too much, and step away from creation and step away from doing anything that remotely involves creating something in my business that would allow me to make money. And it's like, I know I'm doing it, but I've practiced this now for so long to the point where I'm like, yes, but this is real. This is really real. And I would love to be able to see something different to what I'm seeing now so that I can have a different experience. Because it's like, I'm now using it to almost not make any money, which is completely counterintuitive to my, I have to make money in order to get a house to make sure me and my son have a house to live in.
No, it's like getting fat because you hate your body so much that all you can do to quell the feelings of horror is eat more.
Yes.
Yeah. It's not a winning strategy, which you've seen, which you've absolutely seen. So it's, in some ways, it really is as simple as holding out for a better thought, like Steve was talking about earlier. It's like when you can see, wow, yeah, this thorn is making, you know, this sliver is making me really uncomfortable. Well, then you can, what else you got? And we really can, they're user friendly. If we say to them, yeah, that's a crappy thought, give me something better, something new will come to mind. And the fact that you recognize, wow, that's not helpful, is all you need. You don't have to come up with the new thought yourself. Literally, just putting down the old one makes space. And nature abhors a vacuum, and so does the mind. When we've got some space in there, new thinking always comes to mind. But you do kind of have to put down the old one.
Yeah, it's like, even in you saying that, I'm like, yeah, but I've been waiting for that for ages. I've been waiting for it for months. And it's like, and I immediately go, oh, but if I put that down, I need to see that it's not true that I need to make money in order to have a house. But it is true.
but that's what I'm saying is you've been waiting, but there's no point in waiting because you haven't put the pen down yet.
Uh-huh.
Until you put the pen down, there's no point in waiting. Once you put the pen down, now you can wait. And breathe. Nice. Well, thank you guys. It's a pleasure to hear from you and see you, and to be continued. You'll get, not only will the recording of this become part of the program, but we're going to do another one of these with some of the other people going through the program, and you'll be able to get a recording of that one as well.
Very true. Right, Steve, any parting words before we say goodbye to everyone?
I had that same old idea that I have to make this money. How many mortgage payments can I miss before they take my house away? And I would scare myself into making money. And then I realized, I can enjoy making the money that puts a roof over my head. I don't have to have that be scary. That can be, that's a good thing. If I want a house, I can make the money. I don't have to have that truth, that mathematical truth, be a frightening truth anymore. I can say, yeah, that's part of being a grown-up. And I don't have to scare myself with no house in order to say, well, I'm choosing to make money to have a house. And that's creativity. That's not me scaring myself into doing what I don't really want to do. And it was just a little gentle shift. And like Michael said, I don't have to go make a new thought. All I have to be is open to the possibility, and then after experience the inevitability of new thought coming in, just be a little open. And that was something I could do. I could be a little open. That's all I had to do ever. That's my final word.
Excited.
Thank you.
Right,
thank
I'm calling you all guys to say goodbye, and we'll put the recording up on the program.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Brilliant.
Thank you.
Bye, guys.